Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
We are doing great. Thanks for having us, guys.
Nick Nunziata, how are you, brother?
I am great, and I'm really excited to get you guys on here, especially since I know that your new movie has opened up in some parts of the country, but here in Atlanta, we're going to be receiving it on Friday.
Solitary. Oh, that's great.
Man.
Yes,
and,
I just stepped on you saying the title, so you can say it again. Solitary.
I will say it 8 or 9 times. And it's funny because, like, you guys are many things to me, and you're many things to the world, but you guys are, like, hardcore, serious, critical darlings. And I don't know, it's just such a weird suit to put on you guys. Like,
just this week. Suddenly, this week, we became that.
Yeah, you know, you have the right now to fucking hate our movie and us because you're, like, the old-time fan. You were there. You're like I am about REM. They're my favorite band of all time. But, you know, around the fourth album, Life's Rich Path, when they became, you know, it was, for a minute there, it was very annoying that anyone else cared.
Well, that's a great album, though. That's a great album.
Well, that's what rescued it. That is such a great album, man. Begin to Begin. I mean, yeah, it's an awesome album, but it was a real departure in a way for them.
Yeah. It's like the guy who's like, God, I love James Cameron after Piranha 2, but he just completely sold out.
Yes, it's true.
No, it's great, though. So just to inform those out there who haven't been paying attention, the boys who have who are known in the world of Chud for Rounders and Knockaround Guys and for the Neil Berger movies, Illusionist, Interview with the Assassin, and then, of course, for Ocean's 13 and a few others. I mean, you just put out a movie where you guys directed. I know that Brian is the writer credited on there, and it's a tour de force for Michael Douglas, and it's a movie that doesn't feature any poop jokes or any, you know, any there's no, like, back alley fights. There's no there's some smart ass dialogue, but it's a completely it's a grown up movie.
Well, there's sort of a back alley beat down. It's not much of a fight. It's a little one sided, but
yeah. Oh well, but you should. Yeah, but the thing is like, you know, you go on and you read the reviews of it, and of course Douglas just owns. He just absolutely owns. But you know, if you look at that synopsis, you know, just cold, you wouldn't. It's just such a different vibe from you guys. And I, you know, before we start getting, you know, folks to ask the really interesting questions, I kind of want to get just a peek into the genesis of this whole deal.
You know, it's funny. I mean, and it is true, Nick. I mean, you have been such a supporter of our work from the time of Rounders, and you recognized that movie before really almost anybody else did. You know, what do you think? It took like 3 or 4 years before that movie started really penetrating the culture. And I remember we spoke to you about a year after, right, is when we met. We were doing a junket for Knockaround Guys, and you were so, like, loud and proud about that movie, and it really meant a lot to us then because there weren't many people like you, you know, out there then. And so you're certainly...
Which is why the world continues to turn.
So, you know, absolutely are, you know, from your perch, like, it's fair for you to make that statement, and you know our work so well. I mean, to us, we didn't even think of it as a different thing that consciously because Ben Kalman, the character... In a weird way, he talks like an extension of our characters, and he is a guy who, in certain ways, despite being really capable, can't get out of his own way to a certain extent, and he is trying to, like, get over on people, and so there's some element of the con man in him, even though he's not a con man in the traditional movie sense of the con man.
Right.
So I understand why you think it's a departure, but I'm not sure that I think it is as much.
Well, I think part of it too is like, obviously, you know, if you look at Worm, who I guess you could say in some respects has a parallel to maybe a younger version of Ben, there's a sexiness to it, and there's, like, you know, there's always that feeling that he's going to find a way to beat the game. And the cool thing about visiting that kind of a character at this stage in his life, I mean, the game is won. And it's interesting to see, especially somebody like Douglas, who is always playing the guy who's on top of the world. It's just nice to see that approach where you know, the warts and all, and the reality that, you know, eventually, you know, time is going to win, and that, you know.
Well, that's one of the reasons why it had to be Douglas for this role. because in so many ways, he, you know, if you're from the New York area like we are, you see tons of these guys swaggering around on Long Island and Manhattan, and they're basically, they're either quoting Gecko or they think they're Douglas himself. You know, in so many ways, he's played these iconic, successful business guys. Even the character in Fatal Attraction seems like a precursor to Ben Kalman. So, you know, it was just one of the many reasons why it was perfect to get him for
this. I mean, he's sort of like the avatar of American success, you know, the on-screen avatar of American success. And so the fact that he was willing to go to the place that this character goes to and to explore that was, you know, awesome to us and inspiring.
What was his initial reaction to the material? I mean, was he like in full throttle? Like,
well, he threw it across the room, and then there was a large cash delivery, and that seemed to open his mind to it.
You know, I mean, he immediately said yes. What happened was Steven Soderbergh, you know, the producers on this movie are Paul Schiff and Steven Soderbergh, and Soderbergh.
I've heard of Schiff. Who's the Soderbergh?
Right. But, you know, Schiff produced Rushmore and a bunch of other great movies. And but when Soderbergh read the script and agreed right away that Michael should do it, he called Michael and sent it to him. And then we got a call from Michael's office saying, can you guys meet him at the Beverly Hills Hotel 2 days from now for coffee? And we were in New York, but we said, yes, absolutely. And flew out there and met him. But he shook our hands at the end of the drinks or coffee or whatever, and said, all right, let's make the movie. I can start next September. You know, he gave us a time period. And we ended up starting, you know, within 3 weeks of the date that he suggested.
And then you managed to put, like, the most amazing supporting cast around the guy. I mean, just all up and down, you look at the group of people that you got for this. It's insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, the New York actors were happy to get a chance to do material like this. They really responded to the script. They wanted to work with Michael. Luckily, we'd been cajoling a bunch of them to work with us in the years before, so we were kind of primed. We were like, you can't say no again. Come on and do this then.
Yeah, this was, I mean, we got everybody, every first choice for this. I mean, you know, everyone in it is pretty much the only person we went to. And I think a lot of it had to do with wanting to work with Michael, the fact that we were in New York, the fact that it was dealing with this sort of stuff. And, you know, we tried to give everybody good lines. So, fun stuff to play. But,
yeah,
they were great. I mean, we're thrilled that, like, Olivia Thirlby, you know, agreed to come do this in an unbilled way because it's obviously a tiny part, but such a crucial part that she plays, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, but even like a Richard Schiff, who's in there for pretty much one scene,
yes.
Who people that know actors and pay attention know that guy is just class and just, you know, just completely...
100%, man. Or Ben Shankman, who's in this movie in three scenes and... You know,
right.
from Pie, I mean, you probably know him from Pie, which for us is an amazing performance that he gives in that movie. But he's also a Broadway star and was in Angels in America and HBO. And, you know, all around, the guy who plays Jenna Fisher's husband is named David Costable. And you know him from
Great
The Wire or Damages. But he was the best actor at my college. And he was like a really, at my college, he was like a really snobby 18-year-old Costable. Like, he would hardly even talk to me when I would hang around the theater because I wasn't, you know.
Well, he's talking to you now.
He is. That wasn't quite the artist that he was. But he's such a great actor, and we were so psyched to get him to come do the movie.
He was just on Breaking Bad, and it was a great little role. When I saw the movie basically the same day as I watched his introduction of Breaking Bad, and it was just like, you know, he's one of those guys who is sneaky. Like, you know, he's everywhere, but it really took that to kind of make the connection there. But the best, the very best, and the fact that you got Nascarella in there, and that he's named Nascarella, it's like, that guy, I don't know what he's like in real life, but I would just be afraid of him.
Obviously, I wrote it for him, right? I mean, so...
Kind of like that in real life, or he could be.
I mean, that crossed. I would say this. I mean, I really wrote it trying to capture Arthur's voice in that situation. And I mean, I don't think he changed. Maybe he changed a word or two, but you know, that's him.
He's a great guy
to have on your side.
Up and down, completely up and down. Obviously, it's you know, Douglas is what, you know, is what gets people in the door. But just the fact that you've got, like, and I love Danny DeVito more than I care to admit, and just seeing him in a role that doesn't, that's a real drama, you know, a dramatic role that's not, you know, capitalizing on the Danny DeVito-ness of it all. And you know, like Mary Louise Parker, Sarandon, all those people, it's just insane. I also wanted to mention that you got Michael Penn.
Yes, we did. And again, like, that's the kind of thing that happened with this movie the whole time. You know, I mean, we couldn't think of a composer we'd want to work with more than Michael, and he watched the movie and sort of immediately said, yep, let's do it. And collaborating with him was exactly as great as you might imagine it would be. And he was the best. You know, because in a movie like this, Nick, where you're shooting, we only had 26 days to shoot the thing. And, you know, everybody had, no one was getting paid a fortune, so everyone was there for the right reasons. From, you know, from the cinematographer, Alvin Kushler, who you know from Lynn Ramsey's movies, all the way, you know, to Michael Penn.
As far as, like, coming from Knock Around, which, if I'm not mistaken, was that the last thing you directed before that? Yeah, right. I mean,
well,
like,
we had directed, you know, the pilot to our TV series since.
Right.
But, yes, this is the first feature we directed since Knock Around. So, you know, in those years, I mean, the big difference between, you know, other than sort of like, obviously, the story we set out to tell, but the big difference in us is just having spent a bunch of years under Soderbergh's tutelage, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing I really kind of, I mean, I can't imagine what that must be like. But you could see a little bit, I mean, just, it's when the right people kind of hook up and stick together, we need that guaranteed quality with all the shit that we're being forced to watch these days. It's, you know, he's one of those very few folks out there that, okay, all things being what they are, at least Soderbergh's got X coming out. There's so few of those people, and the fact that you guys got hooked up with that guy is just kismet.
We feel the same way. I mean, you know, he, from the beginning, he's just such as an artist, he's so open and available, and really brought us in, and in collaborating with him on Oceans and then Girlfriend Experience, and just over those couple of years, talking to him about movies every day and about how he thinks about them and about how one can think about them, and just having him as a resource this whole time has been invaluable. And I think just it all kind of seeped in somehow. You know, I don't think our movie really looks or feels like a Soderbergh movie, but I think a lot of it somehow was absorbed.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you mentioned Girlfriend Experience. Like, it's so weird how that movie has seeped into, like, the consciousness, at least on the internet, as far as the people that read my site and all that. You know, whenever I mention, you know, one of you guys or both of you guys or anything, that's, like, one of the things that completely, like, it's almost instantly brought up. And, you know, and to me, it's always, you know, Rounders obviously is the gateway for me, but it's just so weird how that movie has kind of snuck through and kind of permeated the consciousness, at least of, like, the film geeks.
Well, I think we have to attribute that to Levine's acting, don't we, Nick?
Yeah, you're a dick in that movie.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you are. What a fucking dick you are in the film, Dave.
That's fantastic.
So you're playing yourself, right? Unfortunately, yeah.
Except I don't traffic with professional escorts. That was the acting part.
Well, I find the amateurs more gratifying.
Well, where do you find them?
Well, I live in Alpharetta, Georgia. I mean, so it's either the cow or the girl. You know. So, I have the boys on here as well. I wanted to see if Justin, if you had a question for the gents before I start bringing in callers.
Of course, I have a question for the gents. What about Rounders 2? Any work on Rounders 2? I saw it announced on the very amazing IMDb that,
well,
maybe it's being worked on.
It got mentioned in some article, because as the years go by and we run into Damon or Norton, who we've always stayed in touch with, and even checking in with Malkovich and John Dahl, everybody wants to do another one, and we do also. It's just a question of telling the right story, and we basically, you know, sort of have a way in, but we all want to protect the first one and do the right movie. We don't want to just try to jam out a sequel, but everybody is kind of on board. So we think it'll happen at some point. Somebody mentioned it in an article, and then it got this little bit of life.
Yeah, I think what happened was Matt mentioned it, and you mentioned it, Dave, in some article for your book. At the same time, like Matt said it in some interview, and you said it in some interview. But we don't have a script, so it's all nonsense until we have a script.
Okay,
let's go back to calling Dave
about
the movie. Sorry, what's that?
I just got a little excited because, you get Edward Norton to come back, you could lock everybody out of the editing room.
No. We're the wrong guys to make that joke to.
Good. That's the last joke that I'll make before I leave, so.
I do the whole Bronx Tale thing to you now. Now you can't leave. I mean, Norton is our guy. We've made two movies with him, and he's the best. He's the fucking best.
I like him, too. He's the Hulk. Great.
Here we go.
I'm about to get on a plane and come down to Georgia.
I don't blame you. I don't want credit for this, but how's about this? Gretchen Mol doesn't need to be in it.
Listen, she's a sweetheart. That's our fault. That's on us. We wrote a half a lame girl part, and it's not her fault. Young lady brought everything she could to a thinly written role.
I think she's a good actress, actually.
You guys give slow claps on these podcasts because I think Brian deserves one for that selfless immolation he just did. Slow clap.
My take is I wanted the film to end, and then post credits, he's like, you know what? Fuck her. I'm gonna go back and play cards. That was my wishful. I know too many people like that. I think that's what it is. I know too many people like that. And I just, I was so in love with, I'm so in love with the both of those lead characters. It's like I just want them to go on forever. So it's just me being a misogynist prick rather than.
Well, he does though. I mean, that is what he does.
Bill Simmons calls her the best wet blanket girlfriend in movies or something.
I don't think she has anything. She's done pretty well for herself. I think she's surprising.
Yeah, I love her in her small little role in Donnie Brasco.
One another movie that is just utterly rewatchable.
Yep. I never turn around. That's definitely one that when it's on, I know that's where my next 2 hours are going.
Yeah. And for some reason, it's one of those things. It's like when we first met, we started talking about those little kind of movies that keep us going and those little kind of off the beaten path things. And there's so precious few of those out there. But I watched it recently and I was like, James Russo, one of the most underutilized guys.
We were talking about him 2 days ago, Mikey Tandino.
He's awesome.
He's Mikey Tandino, man, from the first Beverly Hills Cop.
Well, and you know what's funny about that is Breaking Bad, once again, Jonathan Banks has become like one of the best characters on that show.
Oh, that is, man, Jonathan Banks, that's what happened is 2 days ago we were talking about Wise Guy and Ken Wall and Jonathan Banks, and then we started talking about James Russo. That was the whole conversation.
Well, I mean, okay, you got Nascarella. I mean, there's no reason why in the near future on a project...
We almost worked with Banks. We almost had Banks in our TV show Tilt. But we even showed a clip, like, it was when we were casting Mike Madsen's role, and... We even showed Jonathan Banks to the studio, like to the network, and said, he could do this, but they were not having any.
How do you watch Beverly Hills Cop and that performance and not basically just know that that guy is gold?
He is, man. Well, cuz.
So good. So good.
Right? We love that line, and then we love the Steven Berkoff line when he goes, that'll be a neat trick.
Yeah. Now, I understand why people don't cast Steven Berkoff in a lot of roles, but fucking Banks.
No. He's on the verge of a huge comeback, Berkoff.
You think so?
I think he might be ready to come all the way back right now.
Hey, he had a hell of an evil villain run, I'll tell you that much.
Isn't he?
That one-two punch of that movie, and Rambo is pretty unbeatable.
It really is, and I almost had my forehead modified to match his for Halloween that day.
Hey, what's the name of the guy? You'll know this. What's the name of the actor who was the other, the blonde, weird, blue-eyed guy from The Firm?
Oh, Tobin Bell.
That guy's great, too, man.
Oh, yeah, and he's a superstar because of the Saw franchise.
Oh, is he in all the Saw movies?
He's the main bad guy.
See, that's where my film geekdom is not extend to horror movies.
That's why you continue to succeed. You would have time to write books and shit if you kept up with Tobin Bell's resume. Jesus Christ, that's my job. I'll take care of that shit.
Well, I knew you'd know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else am I gonna fucking do? I mean, I'm gonna know what Tobin Bell's up to. All right. I know that you guys got a little bit of time left, so let me bring in a caller. There's a guy. We got a guy named Mike calling from Long Beach who wanted to ask you gentlemen a question. Is that cool?
Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh. All right, hang tight. Here we go. Hello, sir. You are on the air.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Yeah. Whatever.
All right. I'm a big fan of you guys. And
thanks.
What's up?
No. Go ahead.
Have at it.
All right. You guys just kind of want to get your take on the climate of the movie industry right now with all the reboots and remakes, or as Nick likes to say, remakes, going on, and having pretty much earned almost immunity with Rounders, the other stuff you've done, and also dabbling in Walking Tall. How's that impacting you right now as filmmakers? Is it tough to get something like this new Michael Douglas film made, or what? Well, how's that?
Yeah, here's the answer. I mean, look, films like a lot of guys who do what we do, one of the ways that guys like us who have families and, that we can make movies like The Girlfriend Experience and Solitary Man is we do work as script doctors a lot. We go in and work on big Hollywood movies, and we try our best to make them work and to make them the best that we can. The film business has always been about properties, and about entertainment. I mean, Mamet always writes about the difference between an entertainment or an amusement and drama or a tragedy. And, the movie business has always been about all those things. We basically concern ourselves with telling stories. And sometimes we're telling stories that are based on, a big sort of Hollywood idea and sometimes a smaller one. But for us, when we get really excited about a story that we have to tell, we don't let sort of the prevailing wisdom or the realities of the game influence us. We knew Solitary Man would be hard to put together, so we knew we had to shoot it in 26 days and get a movie star like Michael Douglas in it. We just kind of put our heads down and we're determined to do it. I don't know what's to be gained by guys like us doing heavy strategic thinking. We'd rather be thinking about funny lines and unique characters.
That's awesome. And it definitely shows in the work, because you guys are definitely one of the more talented duos out there. And it shows through. It doesn't even matter what you guys are working on. I'm really excited for this Michael Douglas film to come out. I can't wait to go see it.
Thank you very much. Man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, wish you guys all the best. I do hope Rounders 2 happens, but hope it.
We gotta make it happen right in a way that it doesn't suck, though, man. That's the thing. I mean, the movie's so important to people that we just can't go fuck around. It has to be. We have to do it when we know we have it plumbed. And until then, we won't.
And there's one more aspect to it that complicates it, which is Miramax holding the rights, and now that place sort of being on the block or going away more or less as a going concern. So that will have to be sorted out too. Though that could be possible when it's time.
I've heard really good things about the Wall Street follow up, and I kind of wonder if that might be. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. Of course, I don't.
We heard
I don't
it's
know
great
anybody's
too.
Worked. Yeah, I don't know anybody who's worked with Douglas lately, but Rounders is hallowed ground, and there's a part of me, like in the 80s, I think they were making films with the idea that people are just content to see more of these people, to see them do what they did, and it was fine, it was doable, but something like that, it took a long time, like you said, to seep in. And to reach people, and now, of course, it's a cornerstone. I mean, absolutely a cornerstone. And there, I'm almost content to just watch those guys just talk. But I totally respect, and I'm so thrilled that you guys, have that mentality. And if you look at Damon doesn't do bullshit. He doesn't make films just to make films. And Norton, same way. I mean, like those guys, there's too much integrity in the group.
You hit it. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we gotta, imagine how it would go. I mean, we'd have to be able to call Matt and Edward and tell them that we had the thing. And there's just no way we could make that phone call if we didn't believe it, And so, we have to know that we have the script that we could send to Matt and Edward, and that they would go, "Yep, this is the movie." And we just don't have it yet. So,
Yeah, well. No.
But maybe I'll come down and watch your cigar store poker game and then get inspired.
I think you wouldn't even have enough for a Saved by the Bell episode. Well, I know the time's winding down. I wanted to kind of just get a quick gauge, David, on the book writing. I mean, how did that come about, and how's that working for you?
I mean,
the first book was fantastic. I haven't read the second one yet.
Thanks, man. Yeah, City of the Sun, it introduced this character, Frank Bear. This story and that character was just something that was in my head for a really long time. And for various reasons, I decided to write it as a book instead of as a movie. The second one came out like last year. The paperback's coming out soon. It's called Where the Dead Lay. It's coming out next week. And I'm working on the third one in the series right now. The books are really well received, and we hope to make a movie version of City of the Sun before too long.
That was my next question. So, I mean, is there anything else that you guys have that we're able to tell people that are coming, or what's next, or what you guys got cooking?
Well, the only other thing I can tell you is there's this book called Beat the Reaper, written by a guy named Josh Bazell. Great book. And we wrote an adaptation of that we hope Leonardo DiCaprio is going to star in. I mean, he's said he will. It's just a matter of finding the right director. It's a movie that's set up at Regency. And, you know, we hope that movie gets put together. We're not the producers on it.
That has got to be the fastest-paced script you guys have written in terms of, like, the content.
Yeah, it moves along pretty good.
The thing blisters by.
Hey, man, we got to jump. It's really great talking to you.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for your time, guys. Good luck with the movie this weekend.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you
soon. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.